Welcome back to another episode of Cognitive Connections, where we explore topics on dementia. I'm thrilled to have you join us today for a conversation that's both personal and enlightening. Our guest, Navjot Gill, isn't just a PhD candidate at the University of Waterloo. She's a passionate advocate for change in dementia care, especially within South Asian communities. Navjot's journey began with her grandmother's diagnosis and led her to understand the unique challenges faced by South Asian Canadians living with dementia and their care partners. In today's episode, Navjot opens up about her research, sharing stories and insights that shed light on the cultural and linguistic barriers surrounding dementia. Navjot helps us understand the realities that many families live with. It was a wonderful and insightful conversation. Hope you enjoy it. Navjot, can you start by talking a bit about yourself and describing how you came to be in the field that you're in and doing so much good work in?
Thank you. Yes, for sure. So my name is Navjot. I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Waterloo. I'm working with Dr. George Heckman in the School of Public Health Sciences. My current dissertation for my PhD is focused on understanding the experiences of South Asian Canadians living with dementia and their care partners. So the study, the dissertation has three moving pieces where I will be looking at the experiences of people living with dementia and their care partners, with recognizing symptoms, receiving or seeking a diagnosis, and the community services piece post-diagnosis. And then I'll also be talking to physicians to understand their experience of disclosing a dementia diagnosis to a South Asian community. And then I'll be talking to community organizations who work, such as the Alzheimer's Society, who work with people living with dementia and their care partners post-diagnosis to provide support to improve their well-being. How I ended up here was when I started my PhD. Initially, my research was more focused on health-seeking behavior in older adults. That was my master's thesis. And since I joined my PhD right in the middle of the pandemic, I was like, oh yes, I'm gonna do COVID research. It's novel, it's new. But then I started as a research assistant on a project funded by Public Health Agency of Canada that looked at dementia surveillance across Canada, the risk factors for dementia and the experience of people living with dementia. And that's where I kind of got reeled in towards dementia research, and we were focusing on the diversity piece. So I ended up taking a course on dementia with one of my advisory committee members. And that course was really helpful. And then I also had a chance to work as a program assistant with the local Alzheimer's Society, Waterloo Wellington. So I was with them for 4 months, working with them in their social recreation programs. And that's where I kind of saw that there's so much out there that someone living with dementia and their care partners can utilize this, Minds in Motion, Tea Time. They would create these beautiful craft bundles that could be sent out, picked up. And then I kind of reflected on how my grandmother is living with dementia, and I was like, but she can't access any of these. And I was like, there should be something. So I looked around and I still couldn't find anything because she's not literate in English. So I couldn't give her any of those bundles. She wouldn't be able to do word search. And then,
what language does she speak?
She speaks Punjabi.
Okay.
But even in that, her literacy is limited. And now because of dementia, before she used to read prayer books and stuff. No, she no longer does that either. But then I was looking at in the social programs as well, they do even in Minds in Motion, right? You do 45 minutes of exercise and there's 45 minutes of social piece. But those were also really embedded in Western culture, right? So you'll, let's reminisce about your summer spent at the beach, or, let's talk about the rock and roll era. So those things, and, there is that cultural disconnect. And I was like, okay, let's see what, and then that just kind of almost steamrolled me further. I went into the literature to see what are the experiences of Canadians who are from diverse ethno-racial communities, what are their experiences. So my focus was South Asian. So I specifically searched for South Asian communities to see what their experience is living with dementia, because I see all these resources that are available out there. It's not like there's a lack of awareness in the country. We have so much through the Alzheimer's Society, and not just all that, even local organizations. You have all these pamphlets, you have First Link, through, and all these amazing resources. And then when I looked at the literature, I searched, I was like, okay, let's do a scoping review. Of course, being a researcher, let's get a publication out of this. So I did a quick search in PubMed and I saw maybe 10 studies. I'm like, something is not right. So I got in touch with the library, and I'm like, I'm not doing this right. I'm only finding like 10 studies, and out of those five are like indigenous communities, just because I was searching Indian Pakistani, so that term Indian was pulling in indigenous work. And she sat down with me, she's like, this is all there is. I'm like, how?
So there was a big gap.
There was a big, big gap. Yeah. I think the last study that looked specifically at just South Asian community was 2012, where they looked at the experience of recognizing symptoms. And that study actually showed there was a 4-year delay for South Asian community in terms of just getting a diagnosis because they couldn't understand what the symptoms were.
So that was 12 years ago.
Yeah. And then, there's more recent studies coming out, but they're often a mix. So, they look at all the ethnic communities and it's not really generalizable. Like, it's more so just looking at, and then not out of Canada, like it's out of UK. There's a lot of South Asian and community and other ethnic minorities. America has a lot, but for them, they're prominent immigrant or other ethno-racial communities of the Black community and the Latin community. So their research is more from that perspective.
Gotcha.
So I went back to my supervisor. I'm like, George, there isn't a lot here. How can I focus my thesis on this? So I worked with him and we put together an advisory committee, amazing people who have been so far guiding me towards this work and helping me put together this dissertation, which can add to the existing knowledge and potentially from the Canadian perspective, because even though we do have research out of the UK and the US, we can't really almost apply it to the Canadian community just because the immigration history is different, our experiences with racism are different, the healthcare system is very different, So you can't just say like whatever the people living in UK are experiencing, because they even like, so the immigration pattern is very different from what it is in Canada. So people immigrated a lot earlier, they had a very different experience with racism as compared to what it was in Canada. So, and then the healthcare system, everything, like those pieces, they don't fit.
Yeah.
So we can learn. So there's a lot to learn from that research, because some beliefs are common, but then you can't really say, okay, this is what's happening, let's just follow that and adapt healthcare system accordingly.
I never thought of that. So what you're saying is that when we take data that has been studied in like the UK and the US, it doesn't add up for us because the way that our immigration played out over the years and in the past is different. So what the immigrants have experienced also different.
Yep. And it's also this thing called a third culture that most immigrants form when they move from their home country to the country they're immigrating to. So it's like a mix and match of what they brought, the values that they brought from home versus trying to adapt and acclimate to their new host country. So personal example for me is like, you know, I enjoy the hockey, like Tim Hortons and everything. But then at the same time, I also enjoy my chai and, you know, I enjoy watching cricket. So I have created this mixture between what I have created, this culture of what's I feel I relate with in Canada versus what I've learned from my parents about my culture from back home.
Mm.
So that would be very different. For example, I would not be the same person if I was living in UK.
Right.
Then I would probably be a football fan, right? Things along those lines, right? So it's going to be very different. Then that's how, like, it's going to, the things, the way that they come together would be very different. So that's one of the important pieces of why we can't just use research done on other communities and say, okay, there's a South Asian community in UK. This is their experience. This is what probably it is like for people in South Asian communities in Canada as well. Like, no, that's not how it would be.
Yeah. So let's talk more about your personal experience with your grandmother. You've talked about this before with us, but take us back to what that experience has been like. I know you did study for a while in India and got to spend some time with her.
Yeah, so my grandmother does live with us, like ever since I've been growing up. We lived in a multi-generational home, so my grandparents did live with us. And I did spend about 10 years in India, so I did my high school and undergrad. So I really got to learn more about my own culture, learn to speak the languages without an Anglo accent, and really, you know, really connected with my roots. So that helped me further connect with our grandparents. And that piece of being in India for those few years really helped me understand the culture. But then again, when I say South Asian culture, I specifically mean Punjabi Indian culture, because South Asia is huge. There are 8 different countries and I'm just 1/8 of it. And even from 1/8, I'm from Northern India. My family's from Northern India. So yeah, that piece was really nice to be able to go experience that. And then with my grandmother's diagnosis, eventually we were okay with it. Like, nobody was really aware of what dementia is. We had a really good GP for her who was able to So we were not seeking a diagnosis, we came across it. So my grandparents used to do summers in Canada. They used to go back to India for winters once they retired. Mm-hmm. And doing those movement, like moving back and forth, she would get really disoriented. So we brought it up to her GP. She said, oh, this is what it is. And at that time, I think I was in my undergrad. So, and I trained as a physio. So I, as part of my studies, I knew what Alzheimer's dementia was, but I wasn't really focused in on it. So when my family said, we were all like, yeah, that's, and since she was diagnosed relatively early, like she was forgetting things. So, you know, she would forget my name. She would call me by my aunt's name, my dad's, her daughter's name. Mm-hmm. Or we were kind of like, okay, you know, she's also 70 plus, like, you know, touching 80. So even if she's missing out on names or she's missing out on where she is in terms of, you know, she used to get confused. Like if she just came back to Canada, she would be like, oh, you know, she would think she's still in India. Mm. So we kind of went on for a few years like that. But then over time, as her Alzheimer's progressed, the behavioral symptoms came in. Mm-hmm. And that's where, so I'm part of her care team in the sense that, you know, helping with translations and resources and stuff. But my mom and dad are the main care partners. They live with her full time. I've now moved to Alberta, but they still, like, you know, watching my parents navigate. It's difficult because they're trying their best, but they don't have resources that can really explain what dementia. So now I'm able to, you know, tell them that this is, you know, like times when my grandmother's like, I want to go home. Mm-hmm. And my mom's like, you are home, you know, so telling mom that this is, you know, you don't argue with someone living with dementia, right. You live in their reality. So if she says she wants to go home, you tell her that, you know, we can go home in the evening, you know, when dad comes back or something like that. So it's been difficult watching my parents navigate their roles as care partner. And it's also been difficult watching my grandmom navigate this journey as someone living with dementia, just because you know that these resources, are, it's like almost there's something in your grasp and you can't quite reach
it. It's just out of your reach.
And it's, there's no one to blame, right? Because everyone's doing their best in terms of the services are there, but we also need to be mindful that the immigration pattern is drastically changing in the recent years. So it's going to take some time, and efforts are being done. I can see it all around me, and it brings such joy to see that.
Can you talk about what it's like, I mean, watching your parents, watching your grandmother go through this, and then, you know, being in a country where English is the first language, what the frustration might be?
So I think for me, the sort of frustrating piece or the piece that kind of I felt like, okay, how do I do this, was explaining to my parents what Alzheimer's actually is. Once I learned, so I took a, like I was part of the research project, I was part of a course. I don't know it all, I'm still learning, but I got a relatively good understanding of what Alzheimer's is through my own experiences. So trying to explain to my parents of that, you know, Alzheimer's disease, it's not just memory loss, there are behavioral symptoms to it, you know, because I think there's such lack of awareness even within the community that more often than not, like, and, you know, simple things like sometimes when someone just had food and they're like, oh, I'm hungry, why didn't you give me breakfast? And then the person who doesn't know about Alzheimer's, they're like, how do you not know? Like, isn't your stomach full, right? Yeah. So, and then it's like, no, that's how it is. They don't remember things, right? So finding, so if someone really knows what Alzheimer's is, they're like, sometimes they are doing this on purpose, right? Mm. So that frustration that comes with it. So for me trying to explain to my parents that, you know, this is what Alzheimer's is, and trying to find resources to show to them was a struggle. Like, of course, there are translations out there all in, like, even I think Alzheimer's Society Canada, Alzheimer's Society BC, they have a specific one for South Asian communities. But the translations, they tell you what dementia is translated. They tell you what the symptoms are. But that's just very superficial. Mm-hmm. And then translation doesn't necessarily mean adaptation, because some of those things are not culturally specific, right? Mm-hmm. So you know how we have resources for Alzheimer's, which actually tells you scenarios, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, if your loved one is behaving in a certain way, this is not what you should do, this is what you should be doing. But then those are in English. Mm-hmm. So for my parents to, like, even though my parents can read English, but for them to kind of understand. And then there's also lack of representation when it comes to resources. So, you know, you mostly see people of European descent on the pamphlets, on the flyers. Mm-hmm. So it just adds to this existing notion that dementia is a Western disease. It doesn't happen to us. It doesn't happen in our community. And I remember Alzheimer's Society UK, now they have created resources, amazing resources. They actually have one where they interviewed a lady living with Alzheimer's from the South Asian community. Mm-hmm. But this was back, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. that the resource that they had was, it was a, you're like a British couple living in the suburbs, and mm-hmm. it was their story in English, but they had somebody voice over it in Punjabi.
Oh, nice.
So I was showing it to my parents, but there was an immediate disconnect because they were translating it word to word, so the language wasn't flowing properly. Oh. And then it was also a white couple, so my parents were like, this, like, they couldn't relate to it because they were not seeing someone who looks like them, who has the same struggles. It was a nice couple in a nice house and living in the suburbs with their two dogs. It was, right, going through their struggles. So that was the disconnect. So I was like, how do I explain this to them, right? So that was just a struggle with my parents. And, of course, over time, they have learned. But that's not how it should be, right? You should not be struggling every day and learning from your struggles. You should be prepared in advance of, this is what's to come and this is how I can cope with this. Mm-hmm. Similarly, for my grandmother, we know that it's very important to have someone who's living with dementia, for them to be socially engaged, to cognitively engaged, to maintain their capabilities and, you know, just have a good quality of life. But with her, since English is not her first language, even though she immigrated 30, 40 years ago, she never really adapted to the Western culture, so she stayed within her own community. So she still does things like knitting, and cooking used to be a big thing for her, taking care of her grandchildren. So her interests weren't going to get like in different, they were not embedded like in the Western culture. So for me to expect that, okay, you know what, I can take her to Alzheimer's Society and, you know, she can enroll in their Minds in Motion class, she would not be able to follow along, right? She wouldn't understand the language, she wouldn't understand the exercise component, because for her, the way she grew up, we are a farming family from back home. So her way of getting physical exercise was doing household tasks, right? Vigorous household tasks of going around the fields, walking the field to drop off lunch
that's
for my grandfather.
That's how she would get her workout,
right? Yes, that's how she got her workouts. And so she wouldn't understand a structured class where she has to do exercise, right? So for her, that's not what exercise is. And then even with the social component, she wouldn't know what the rock and roll era was, or what the Hollywood movies were, right? Or what it was like to go to a beach, because she grew up in a state that did not have beaches.
Right.
It's not fair for us to expect that she should go join those. So that's the piece where, you know, having those services which could accommodate that was like, it's like, you know, they're all out there, but it's sad that I can't.
Yeah.
Like, if I ever end up in that stage, I would be able to access them. But
you've been living in Canada.
Yeah, but I've been, and I'm okay, like, speaking English, but I still feel that I don't know, like, at the end of the day, I still find comfort in my own culture. So that's another piece where I often get is, like, you know, how relevant are these services? Like, you know, once this generation age, when your generation is growing up, they will still be relevant, because I grew up in my culture. As and when I have kids, I'll pass it on to them. And like I said, at the end of the day, you find comfort in your own language, in your own culture, regardless of how the outside world around you is. So yes, I'm acclimated. I do well, right? I'm educated. I have that privilege of going to grad school, getting a PhD, but I still enjoy my own roots. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I personally have never thought of it. It's not just language. It's not just cultural norms necessarily. It's also activities.
Yes, it's just
right. Excellent. Like you were saying, if you put your grandmother in an exercise class like Minds in Motion, one of our programs, and expected her to do that, she'd kind of be like, "What are we doing? Like, what are you doing?" Right. Yeah. So I never thought of it that way, but it does. It even comes far beyond language.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Lace up your sneakers for a stroll with style. The IG Wealth Management Walk for Alzheimer's is not just a walk in the park. It's your chance to strut your stuff for a cause that counts. Ready to make waves in your community and give hope to those navigating life with dementia? Registration is now open. Head to alzheimer.ab.ca to learn more, or call us at 1-866-950-5465. That's 1-866-950-5465. And now, back to the show.
So recently you were able to work with the Alzheimer's Society of Canada on the landmark study too, which is focused on diversity.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I had the opportunity of working with one of their employees on a previous project. So she knew about my work, and I think she recommended that for me to come on. So I was interviewed as let's say, like almost a participant for the study. So I wasn't part of the team. Mm. So yeah, I had the chance. And since I already knew the person, it was really easy to just sit with them and chat. So I told them about my experiences, my grandmother's journey, as well as the work that I'm doing. And, you know, just what we talked about, like, you know, the need for more culturally inclusive services, for resources to support ethno-racial, not just South Asian community, other ethno-racial communities who don't have English as a first language and have different cultural norms in place that guide their day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was a really good experience. And I'm looking forward to the study coming out. And
yes. And can you tell us a little bit about the significance of this type of research to people like your grandmother and your family?
So I think the biggest piece is the representation that it brings. Like, this is huge, and this is amazing work that's being done by Alzheimer's Society, because hearing my story, potentially somebody else who's from South Asian community, Punjabi community, can be like, oh, there's someone who looks like us and they have that problem, so maybe that's not that bad. Like, we can talk about this, right? Because there's such stigma within the community about talking about dementia in the South Asian community, and then there's lack of awareness of what dementia is. So the lack of awareness adds to the stigma. Mm-hmm. And then because there's such stigma, there's lack of awareness. It's like a vicious cycle that we really need to address and break. Mm-hmm. And that's where it comes from, that representation. I think the base of this is having representation and resources that are culturally relevant. So sharing stories. I know there's another person from South Asian community who's part of the landmark study and sharing their story, and they're living with dementia. Mm-hmm. So I feel that's really impactful for the community to see that they're, again, the representation is there. So it's really going to, I hope, open doors for more communication and more people from the community mm-hmm. to step up and say, you know what, we are living with this and it is okay. And, you know, ask for resources.
Yeah, it's going to be very important, I think. And, you know, the stigma that you brought up, mm-hmm. we've talked about that when we met before. Can you talk a little bit about how that played a role with your grandmother and, you know, in India, how mm-hmm. culturally dementia is looked at?
I think that, like, with my grandmother, my parents, like, so I'll talk in general a bit, because I think, like, with my family, we didn't really have, there was just lack of awareness of what mm-hmm. dementia is. We didn't try to find an explanation for it, because initially, and the other thing is, we were looking at the aspect, my grandmother was diagnosed relatively early. So we kind of had a heads up of there is something going on, but like, and then by the time her behavioral symptoms came around, I was already learning more about dementia. Mm-hmm. So I kind of acted as a resource for my parents. Mm-hmm. But in general, within the South Asian community, there's a lot of stigma around dementia, because there is no word for dementia in most South Asian languages, so they don't understand what that term means.
Oh.
So because of that, they're like, oh, maybe when you say, oh, what is dementia? We say it's a memory issue thing, right? Like, that's how most mm-hmm. commonly we say it's related to your memory. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, forgetfulness. Okay, that's fine. They're getting old. It's okay if they're forgetting stuff, right? So there's mm-hmm. one way of normalizing it, saying it's normal aging. If they're forgetting things, that's okay. But then sometimes religious and spiritual components also come in. Mm-hmm. So religiously, studies out of the UK has shown that people see this as something, for example, in the Bangladeshi culture, they believe that if you suffer in your present life, then you attain heaven once you pass. So since dementia is seen as a suffering, they are okay with it and not seek almost like some sort of treatment or anything for it, because they believe if they suffer, they'll attain heaven once they pass.
Oh.
Or some communities, karma, where it comes around. Mm. So people believe that they have dementia because they did something bad in their past life. Reincarnation is a belief as well. Or they did something bad in this life and now they're just paying for it through this. Or with the personal expression piece, where someone might just be talking to themselves, or the hallucination, the behavior changes, that's seen in a positive way, where it's like, oh, they are developing a deeper connection with God. This is them just connecting with God. So they are like different ways of normalizing. And sometimes it's also seen as like a mental health thing, just because you say it has something to do with your brain. Mm. It has something to do with memory. And then, you know, when the personal expressions and the behavioral pieces come in, it's often seen as like a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
That piece, again, mental health is like, you know,
that's right. stigmatized in itself. So dementia gets wrapped into that mental health stigma. And again, people don't want to talk about it because, you know, how do you explain when your loved one is sitting and talking to themselves in a mirror, right? Mm-hmm. Or when they're yelling that they want to leave this place and go to their own home, or when they can't even remember their own child, right? So because there's lack of awareness and you don't know how to explain that, people hide it. Yeah. And that, and because they're trying to hide it, they're not trying to learn about it.
Stigma. And then you get the delays. And and as we know, a delay in diagnosis is has a huge impact, doesn't it?
Right? So, like, you know, finding it out relatively early and then having that time to sit with that with the person who's living with dementia and, you know, plan out their future, because right now they still have that ability to do that with you, right? Talk about what their wishes or expectations are as their disease is going to progress over time and, you know, make plans with them of how they care versus now you have someone who's exit seeking and you're still trying to figure out why they're doing this and then you're coming into the healthcare system in crisis.
And so tell us, for our listeners who don't know, what exit seeking is exactly.
So exit seeking is when a person living with dementia is trying to leave their premises. So they could be, they might have the belief that they want to go home, that they might think that the place they currently are, even they, if they are at home, they might think that this is not my home, so I want to go home. So they're trying to leave the premises.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, and that's one of the common challenges.
Yeah.
Tell us more about the work you're doing right now. I understand that you are a PhD candidate and with the University of Waterloo.
Yeah.
And tell us a bit more about what you're writing in your thesis. And...
Yes. So for my thesis, I am, so since I'm just starting with the base of just understanding what the experiences are of people living with dementia. So I kind of structured my thesis based on a general assumption of how a dementia, someone's journey would be with dementia. So we would have that piece where we're recognizing the symptoms. Once you recognize the symptoms, you either seek a diagnosis or you end up receiving a diagnosis, even if you're not necessarily looking for the diagnosis. And then there's the community services piece, which after you're diagnosed, then you come back within the community and you look for resources which can support your quality of life and your care partner's quality of life. So my first study is looking at all three stages. Mm-hmm. So the recognizing the symptoms, receiving or seeking a diagnosis, and then accessing community support services. So that I would be interviewing care partners and people living with dementia. Just these are going to be in-depth, semi-structured interviews. I'm doing a qualitative study, so it's just listening to their story and learning from their experiences. There's a Punjabi proverb that talks about that by listening to someone's story, you can better understand their experiences. So that's kind of what's guiding my research as well, that just listening to them would help us understand, because it's about them, it's their lived experience. So it's important to hear what they have, because if we know what they're going through, what they require, then only we'll be able to make changes that are adapted to their needs and requirements. So yeah, that's the first study.
I'm
offering it in Hindi and Punjabi. I know it's not inclusive of the entire South Asian community, but I hope I'm able to target as many communities I can within the South Asian diaspora, and hopefully offering it in Hindi and Punjabi would address some of that linguistic barrier. For my second study, I'm interviewing physicians. And this one is just focused on the receiving or seeking a diagnosis. So talking to physicians and understanding what their experience has been disclosing a diagnosis to someone from the South Asian community. So, you know, what did they feel? Were there any cultural or linguistic challenges, or, you know, even the positive? So with this study, I'm not just hoping to focus on the challenges. I'm hoping to focus on the whole story. So even the positives that we can, you know, it's always nice to have the positive. So, you know, something that can drive change, and, you know, we're already doing this much positive things. Let's add more to it. So that's the second study. And third study, I would be interviewing employees of community organizations, such as Alzheimer's Society, to get their understanding, their experiences of working service delivery piece with people living with dementia and their career partners from South Asian community. Again, just to look at their experiences of how it has been working with the community and so far, and what are the challenges they potentially face.
So tell me about physicians. I know that will be part of your second study. Yeah.
So I haven't interviewed. My interviews are yet to be conducted. I'm still waiting for ethics clearance to come through, but existing literature does shed some light on how there are often barriers in terms of navigating those linguistic and cultural challenges for physicians. You know, how do you disclose a diagnosis to someone who doesn't understand what the condition is, right? Or some studies have shown that more often loved ones act as translators. So if a physician is disclosing a diagnosis to a loved one, the loved one may not disclose it further just because they're trying to protect their relative or the person who's being diagnosed, right? Or not understanding. There are also assumptions. For example, with the South Asian community or even Asia in general, East Asian cultures, there's the filial piety piece, where filial piety is that strong belief of caring and respecting for your parents, elders at home. So, you know, since they raised you, now it's your turn as they're aging to care for them.
Right.
So there's a lot of stigma around long-term care homes. You know, we don't send our loved ones to long-term care home. That's not part of our culture. So we kind of take care of our own. And even though that is true to an extent, because of this assumption exists more, sometimes resources are not even offered because of that understanding that just because this person is South Asian, they might not want those resources, but that's not
true.
And this is the third culture piece again, right? Because being in India, there are a lot of multi-generational homes, and times have moved, right? I think this is an old thinking where women more often than not were not part of the workforce. They were full-time homemakers, so they were there as care partners to support their aging in-laws or their parents. But especially immigrating to another country, everybody has to find jobs initially to, you know, work from the ground up to establish a new home in a new country, right? So everybody's working, and with the change in times, women are now part of the workforce. You know, they have their own careers, so it's not sustainable to think that a person who's working full-time also be a care partner full-time, can also be a homemaker, right? And so that piece, so needing to understand that, yes, there's still that understanding and respect for the elders, and we still live in multi-generational homes, but it's not the same.
Right.
Everybody's pursuing their careers, pursuing their jobs, whatever it is, and they're not at home.
Well, we talk a lot about the impact on that multi-generation and also on caregivers. We call them care partners, but caregivers and care partners, they have a lot to take on. And if you're working full-time and trying to take care of someone with dementia or helping them live with dementia, it's a real struggle. And
I've heard and read in places where care partners are like, only if we had a roadmap, right? You know, like, now your loved one is diagnosed, what are the next steps? You know, there should be some place which tells us, okay, this is what's going to happen. You know, like, we sometimes feel lost, and it's like looking for being at sea with no port in sight.
So how can First Link help with that?
So First Link, in terms of being beneficial, is, so how First Link works is, at the time of diagnosis, your healthcare professional reaches out to Alzheimer's Society, and then Alzheimer's Society will reach out to you, and they then, once that contact is established, they will help you with the resources that you need, your care partner needs, the person living with dementia needs, and there's time-to-time check-in, and these resources can really help you navigate that post-diagnostic journey of dementia in terms of, you know, the support, because it's not just the support for the person living with dementia, which is, of course, is paramount. We need those social cognitive engagement pieces which are offered through Alzheimer's Society's various programs, but also the support groups that are needed for care partners to talk to other care partners to help them navigate this journey, because it's not an easy one. So all the support, the more support you can get, the less it is. So I feel this with the First Link, it would be really beneficial.
There's I think something like our last landmark study predicted that in Alberta alone, it was about 1.7 hours expected, unpaid caregiving hours or care partner hours are going to be happening by the time 2050 comes around.
Yeah, and I think Alberta's going to see the largest increase in care partners by 2050. And that's like, and that's another piece, like the resources need to address even for the South Asian communities, that it's okay to ask for these resources, that it's not, like, dementia is very complex, and providing care for being a care partner, someone living with dementia is a long and hard journey, right? You're trying to support someone who may not even remember their day-to-day activities as the disease progresses. So having those resources, which explains what dementia, and also kind of shows that this is how the progression is going to be, and this is the potential trajectory that your life as a care partner is going to go. So they're mentally prepared, because with that lack of awareness, people don't really understand, because it's for them, especially in South Asian community, for them it's a duty to take care of their loved ones. So there's no question if it's dementia, if it's cancer, any disease, it's they're my parents, they're staying with us, we're taking care of them.
So there's a real resistance to something like a long-term care situation,
So, and then those resources are also important to prepare care partners for what it is to be a care partner for someone living with dementia, and opening up these conversations that, you know, there are other solutions, you know, you don't have to do this by yourself. There are resources out there, hopefully, that would be in the future culturally relevant, that you can access. Because the one piece to the long-term care home is just the hesitancy within the community to use long-term care homes, because we want the elders to be at home. But the other piece is those long-term care homes not being culturally relevant, right? So now someone's going to be in an environment 24/7 where potentially nobody speaks their language. The food that they're eating is not familiar to them. The PSWs, they're coming in, don't speak their language, don't understand the dress they're wearing, for example. Like, my grandma dresses in a salwar kameez, which is a traditional Punjabi outfit. She doesn't wear trousers and stuff. So for someone, and it's a complicated thing that you tie around your waist, right? So she knows how to do it, but someone who doesn't understand might not be able to help her dress. So, you know, that's a barrier for her to access a long-term care home.
When I hear you talk about your studies that you're doing and what you're focusing on, in there is, I'm sure, what you'd like to see in the future.
Yeah.
For people that are living with dementia and they come from culturally diverse backgrounds in Canada. What are some of those things that you're picturing?
So I think I'm just picturing an equitable healthcare system where when you walk in, you know that you don't have to struggle. You know, you don't have to wait. We already know there's a wait time to get to a specialist. And then when you put a request for a translator, that just adds up, right? So being able to navigate the system without the additional struggles of having a linguistic and cultural barriers, right? When knowing that, you know, your loved one is diagnosed with dementia, okay, here are the resources. So you have resources, for example, in Punjabi that's explaining this is what dementia is, right? This is how your community might perceive it, but and the way your culture perceives it is okay, but this is how the disease is gonna progress over time, right? So not negating and saying, because most of our understanding of Alzheimer's and dementia is really rooted in Western notion of how the disease is, and every culture has a different way of they look at a certain condition. So not that their cultural lens is wrong, but making sure that it's not harming them. So also trying to raise that awareness of dementia without saying, your cultural piece is wrong, this is not how it should be, right? Because they have their way of seeing the world, and the cultural lens is a big part of it. So having, so what, to you, back to your question, when I look in the future, I see resources that are easily accessible, that are adapted to someone's culture. And again, there's so many cultures, so many languages, so to say that everybody should know what echo is going on is not, right? So also seeing the piece where healthcare practitioners, anyone who's working in the healthcare field or supporting people living with dementia, is practicing that cultural humility piece, that is being open to learning about someone's culture, right? So I say I'm South Asian, but I'm Punjabi, but I may not necessarily know about the South Indian culture, right? What are their norms? So having that open mind to keeping my biases and assumptions aside, and okay, you know, this is, you know, has the openness to learning and lifelong learning what someone's culture is important, and it would be nice to see that it's still there. You know, we have our person-centered frameworks, we have our cultural competency piece, but seeing that being more incorporated as we move on, especially within the field of dementia, and just having that, coming to that stage where stigma is no longer part of the conversation, we are now okay, oh, Alzheimer's, okay, so it's not a memory thing, it's not normal part of aging, you know. Right now we really have to fight to explain what just dementia is. So I see a future where, you know, people are aware of what dementia is, and, you know, we're not taking 5 years to recognize the symptoms, we're not taking 6 years to, we're not going into the healthcare system in a crisis mode, you know, we're able to recognize on time. And at the end of the day, everybody, regardless of your culture, race, religion, everybody deserves a good quality of life when they're living with dementia, and for their care partners as well.
That's wonderful. Is there anything else you want to add before we close?
No, I just feel that this is important work that I'm glad to see thank you for inviting me. This is part of that, you know, seeing that openness to these conversations, seeing the work that is being done. And I hope a time comes in the near future where the community is open to talking, because we really need people living with dementia speak up and share their voices, because it's for them, right? It's with them, it's for them. And they are the ones who should be leading us, and I feel that strongly for the South Asian community, because so far in none of the research we have voices of people living with dementia. So I feel it's important for them to share as well. And if we do this work of eradicating the stigma, addressing the barriers, maybe they'll feel safe to come up and share their experiences.
Sounds like a good future to me.
Yeah.
Well, I've really enjoyed hearing your story. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And just being so open. And the work you're doing is absolutely wonderful. We're really looking forward to seeing what you do next. And you know, hopefully staying in touch. So thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having me and providing me with the platform to share my research and my story. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Cognitive Connections, Conversations on Dementia with the Alzheimer's Society of Alberta and Northwest Territories. If you're looking for additional resources, support, or more information on dementia, head over to our website at alzheimer.ab.ca. Here you'll find a wealth of resources, support, programs, and more. We encourage you to share this podcast with anyone who may benefit from these conversations, and leave us a review. Join us again next time as we continue to explore the multifaceted aspects of dementia with our insightful guests. Until then, take care, stay connected, and remember that every conversation counts in the realm of cognitive connections.